Packet Pushers.
Hello, welcome to the Network Automation Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Cho. Joining me today in co-hosting is Drew Connor Murray. Today, we're talking to Phil Gervasi from Cantig. They are our sponsors for this episode. Today's show is all about the exciting world of network telemetry and observability. So let's dive in. Hey, Phil, can you tell us a little bit about Cantig?
Hey, Eric, and hey, Drew. Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. So I'll start off by saying that my background is as a traditional network engineer. So I come from a networking background, but I also come from a background of living in the real world. And so Cantig is kind of combining this idea of network telemetry, but with understanding that it's all really about context and that when it comes down to it, people don't really care about the network, similar to how we don't really care about the pipes that provide the water in our house, but we care about the water itself. People don't care about the network, but they care about the service, usually in the form of an application that they're consuming over the network. I remember doing a podcast with a friend of mine like a year or two ago, and he said, you know, Phil, it's not actually even about the application that folks care about. It's about the data that they access through the application. So if we can go even that deep, that kind of level of inception, Cantig is all about network observability. So sure, you said telemetry. I'll go a step further and say observability in the context of what it means to real human beings, which is application delivery, accessing data, a human being accessing the data behind a computer. So that's what we're all about. We have a lot of traditional mechanisms in place that we use, of course, because they are still important. And that traditional networks still exist. But we also are moving forward into some more modern approaches, both because the network has moved forward. And then there are also new capabilities that we can use to actually derive information and insights from the network. Again, also, Eric, just keep in mind, in the context of because applications are predominantly delivered over a network today.
So let me ask you, Phil, we've come from monitoring on the network and then visibility crept in and then observability showed up. I think we've been borrowing that from the, you know, container or cloud side of the house. What does observability mean in a network context?
It's a very similar meaning. The concept of observability comes originally from control theory and the idea that you're observing or looking at the outputs of a system in order to determine its health. And so the system that we're talking about here is the network. And the network means a lot of different things, like anything that's involved with packet analysis and forwarding, decision making. So it's a lot of different components because you can think about routers and switches and firewalls and container networking and CASBs and cloud. I mean, there's a lot of components today, load balancers. And so when you look at this entire system, we look at the outputs of that system in order to determine its health and in the context of what its purpose is, which is application delivery. From wherever its source is, whether it's a single source or a distributed source, which is more likely today, down to a human being on a tablet or a computer or whatever. And so when we use the term at Cantig network observability, we're using it exactly like that. We're looking at the outputs of this entire system, which is a variety of components. We are not focused on only flow or only SNMP or only routers and switches in order to then determine what's going on with my application. Why is it slow? Why is it performing the way it is?
So I think that kind of begs the question, what is the network in 2024? You mentioned there's so much variety and we're constantly adding components to it. So what would it look like in 2024?
That is a big question. I have an answer for you, but I'm sure some folks would debate me on it. The way we see it is that the network is whatever is involved in that path of delivering the application down to an end user. And so there's going to be a lot of components that maybe in the past we wouldn't say are the network, and there may be network adjacent, right? I think that's fair. Well, we care about that at Cantig as well, because it's part of delivering the application, which is why network observability is a little bit more broad than traditional network monitoring. But I would say that, of course, our traditional network is still important. We still care about routers and switches and things that forward packets, firewalls, load balancers. But we're also now talking about the SD-WAN devices that we have in place, container networking. We have networking in the cloud that we need to pay attention to. And if you think about it, we're sitting here over a Zoom recording this. I don't know about you, but I'm going to throw a number out there. Like 80%, 90% of the applications that I use on a daily basis are delivered over a network. And most of that is over the public internet because I work from home. So it's not like a network as in my cubicle and then I'm going over some copper down to the IDF at the end of the hall. It's going over the public internet. A lot of that is going to public cloud to SaaS providers and things like that. And so we care about the network in that sense. It is the mechanism, it is the substrate that we use for application delivery. And so everything that's involved with that process, with that entire end-to-end, we care about. So we also care about DNS. We also care about resolution times and why you're being load balanced to one AWS region versus another AWS region. Is that the network? Sort of, kinda. But we still care about it because it's involved with application delivery in 2024. As an example, we're also concerned with, you know, Kubernetes environments. So we use eBPF as a mechanism to look at what's going on with TCP retransmits and fragments and stuff like that right at the kernel level. So we can identify why is there a performance issue, even when your application is built on a container infrastructure.
You mentioned eBPF, and traditionally, as you mentioned, in the telemetry world, we don't really think of that as part of the observability. Maybe we think of that as troubleshooting or security, but you did mention that. So how do you see the different types of telemetry or different ways that differentiate between on-premise or off-premise? Is that how you see it? Or what are some of the categories that you would, you know, kind of break them down?
Sure. All right. So we do break things down in order so that when you log into the Kentik portal, you can look at what you want to look at. And we also break things down in our database so that way we have some structure and some logic.
Right.
But when you think about it, you don't want to break it down to the extent where you're looking at just flow, or you're looking at like your streaming telemetry, you're ingesting that, and you're looking at a graph of that. The reality is that you need to look at all of these things together in the context of the application. So I'm not going to disagree with you here, but I will say that eBPF is much more broad and versatile than it is in the traditional sense where it's just a security tool, or often people will think of it as a mechanism for high performance routing. You'll see that in a lot of like service provider routers and things like that. But it is very much a tool used in observability today. Now, you'll hear it more used in application observability context. So, you know, you think of those kind of companies that are using it to look at whatever they're looking at. But we're very much looking at it now in container network monitoring, though we're focused on the network stack. So again, I mentioned it before, but I'll say it again. We're looking at things like TCP retransmits and fragments and identifying timestamps of when a packet leaves a particular pod, goes to another pod. And therefore, we can understand loss, latency, jitter, and other things involved with networking on a container level. So I will say that eBPF is very versatile beyond just high-performance routing, just security, although those use cases are valid as well.
I want to get a sense of Kentik's boundary. So it sounds like you can get WAN. Can you get data on campus, data center? It sounds like if you're doing eBPF, does that mean you have an agent, or are you pulling from something like a Cilium or something? Where does Kentik play in network observability?
Yeah, well, I'm going to stick with the moniker network observability, Drew. We are very much focused on the network, but as we've kind of discussed thus far, the network does mean a lot. We aren't doing code reviews and things like that, and application performance monitoring, APM. We are more on the NPM side, but it's just so difficult to make a clear line of demarcation between NPM and APM these days. It's just not how it is like it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. We play very much in the network space, Drew, but that does mean that we are pulling information from AWS, like we're ingesting VPC flow logs. We're using eBPF to ingest that information about what's going on in your Kubernetes environment. We're ingesting traditional flow, NetFlow, JFlow, SFlow, whatever brand device you're using. We're ingesting SNMP. Yes, we still care about that because those boxes are out there and we want to help you manage your network. Right now, we're ingesting streaming telemetry as well. We are ingesting routing table information. We are also grabbing information, whatever we can get from your specific environment. You know, maybe that's just like your IPAM, DNS servers, CRM, so we can grab application tags and security tags. So again, we can give those like flows context. And all of that gets ingested and incorporated together into a single unified data repository, or a UDR. So though, you know, Eric, you were asking a little bit about like, what are you looking at? What segment? I mean, we're looking at all these things, but the goal is to put them all together in a unified database. So that way we can find how does this stuff relate together or relate to each other? How do these data points relate to each other? Because when it comes down to it, why is my application slow? I mean, who knows? There's like 107 billion things that it could be. And the reality is if I'm a network engineer and I switch BGP peers from data center A in Singapore to data center B in Boston, for whatever reason, I'm doing some kind of maintenance, and then my like DNS resolution time spike. Well, why? Why did they spike? Because that should have no reason, because I'm using Route 53. That's AWS. What does that have to do with anything? So being able to do that kind of troubleshooting root cause analysis is really the heart of what we're doing at Kentik. And it does require ingesting all of that information and then combining it into a single database to see how it relates to each other. Yeah, that does kind of imply that we're at our core, we're network engineers for sure, Drew, but we're kind of like a data analysis company. Mm-hmm. And then we present that information again in the context of the network.
So it sounds like you do a lot of data enrichment during that ingestion pipeline. So What are some of the data enrichments that you do before you unify it into a database?
Sure. Let me go through the entire pipeline for you. We're ingesting information from our customers, and we are a SaaS company, but we ourselves use our own data centers because we are a high-performance computing environment. We are doing some statistical analysis and ML on the back end. And so what we're doing is we are ingesting flow, SNMP, streaming. We're a subscriber to you as a publisher if you're using streaming telemetry. We'll collect anything that we can, and then we ingest that into our UDR, but it's customer-specific, of course, and we use a columnar database in order to keep that barrier among our customers. And we've also found that it's a very fast database to query for what we're trying to do for our purposes. And yes, we've experimented with different things over the years. Once that information comes in, at the point of ingest, that's when we also enrich that data with whatever we have. I mean, it could be things like threat feeds or routing table information. If you're providing us CRM information, IPAM information from your organization, we'll grab that stuff. It's just database information, so we can just add whatever it is. And then what we do at that point is we do, if folks are familiar with like statistical analysis or ML, we'll do some ML pre-processing there, data transformation, scaling, adjusting range, things like that, which we can certainly get into here, so that we can then do something meaningful with that data. Just to give you an example, so let's say we ingest information that tells us that 80% of our traffic is DNS. That's crazy. But let's say 80% of our traffic is DNS. Think about that number. It's 80%. It's a percentage. You can change it to a decimal, 0.8 out of one, fine. And then over here, I'm ingesting some other information, maybe using streaming telemetry, that I have this many millions of packets per second on an interface. Now I have two different ranges. One is 0 to 100, and one is 0 to many millions, or maybe infinite. I don't know. What happens is when you start to compare those numbers in math, one completely overpowers the other, and it makes the 80% meaningless in the formulas and in the functions that we use to figure out why is one thing happening versus another. And so what we do is we do scaling and normalization, standardization, again, pretty standard ML pre-processing tasks to put all of those numbers in proportionately accurate range between 0 and 1, or -0 and +1, whatever it happens to be. And again, retaining their proportions so we can identify how are these things related. And we can show you on a visual representation, on a graph in the Kentik portal, perhaps in a time series, you know, if it's just something that simple, how these things correlate. Now, I do want to make a point here that we are not like AI ops and ML company. Like, we are a network observability company, and using all these other tools, they're just tools in our tool belt. We can talk about streaming telemetry for the next 40 minutes if you want to, Eric. Like, all of these things are tools in the overall tool belt. And so we do those things though, so we can identify that, yeah, you know, when you switch from this interface to that interface, we do notice that there is a spike in DNS resolution time. The thing is, if you're familiar with even college level math, you don't have to be an AI person or an ML person. You really can't find causal relationships in the data, pure data. You can find correlations, and you can assign a correlation coefficient and say that this is likely a weak correlation or a strong correlation. But you need that qualitative outside influence to understand that there is a causal relationship here. That's an interesting thing. It's actually something I read recently in a book about ML in network operations and network observability that was really intriguing to me. Now, what we do then is we take that and we turn it around and provide it in the form of insights to our customers, where we say, hey, listen, you have this interface over here. No, it's not hosed yet, but it's creeping up. Now, you know, normally this wouldn't kick off an alert because it's like, it's not really bothering anybody, but it's a trend that's happening. This is very simple stuff. This is not fancy AI op stuff. This is just simple statistical analysis. And we're going to throw this out as an alert to you that this is something you should pay attention to. That's one aspect of what we're going
to
do.
I have to ask, how are you getting all this information? Are there collectors that I would have on-prem? Are there agents that I have to run on devices? And since you said SaaS, I assume this is all going up to some cloud-based data lake that you guys are hosting.
Right. Again, a cloud-based data lake that we're hosting. We are not in public cloud ourselves, other than like our lab and things like that, our website. But all of the information that we ingest is over the public internet. So we're using simple things like TLS tunnels to secure that connectivity. And then we're going to ingest the flow data, SNMP streaming, using those mechanisms. Some other ways that we ingest information is from the public sources, like the global routing table and things like that, threat feeds. So it's apart from our customers. We don't then need to install agents anywhere except for the one exception. Well, there's two exceptions. The first exception being our eBPF agents that we're going to install alongside the containers in your Kubernetes environment.
Okay.
That is agent number one. Agent number two is if you choose to use it, which we believe is a pillar of network observability, therefore you should, is our synthetic agents. So if you're running synthetic testing, synthetic monitoring, which you should be, those agents will be deployed wherever you want them. We have them deployed even within Kentik. We deploy them at our homes so we can test connectivity from all over the world. And we're doing much more than that with synthetic agents. But those are the only two agents that you're going to install anywhere as lightweight Linux packages. And if you're familiar with eBPF, it's a very lightweight, unintrusive Linux package as our synthetic agents. And everything else, though, is something that we're pulling from you or you're pushing to us.
Okay, so for NetFlow, I have to configure whatever flow collecting devices I'm using to send that those flow records to you.
Your flow exporter points to us. Your SNMP communities point to us. Okay. We are a subscriber to your streaming telemetry publishing, and that's how that works.
Given that SNMP, particularly flow, I think can have an impact on device performance as well, and also have an impact on your actual network because mm-hmm. you're sending across that network. Do you have, you know, recommendations on how often you want flow records and so on and how much?
Right. So we have found over the years that statistically you can sample flow up to a certain point and it still be very highly representative and therefore accurate of what's going on in your network. And so we are not opposed to flow. There are some that say that only packet captures, that's the only true visibility. Well, that's baloney. That's great. But that requires an incredible infrastructure running side by side your network. And if your network is not yours because you're utilizing public cloud, have fun with that. And it also requires an incredible amount of computational power, storage, and all those things. We are not opposed to packet captures. It is an absolutely necessary thing. You know, let's say you have a security audit or some kind of, you know, investigation that you're doing. Fine, it's got its place. By and large, Drew, we do sample flow at different sample rates for different customers, for different use cases in order to accommodate that and so that there is no adverse performance hit on their network. But you'll be surprised that if you're sampling at like a 1 per 1,000, like one sample versus per 1,000 packets, you're statistically accurate with regard to what's going on in the network. However, that's flow. That's not necessarily like device information.
Right.
So we also use other mechanisms like SNMP and streaming telemetry to accommodate that.
How about logs?
So we're not ingesting logs yet, but we have things on the roadmap. For example, we have like wireless visibility on our roadmap for this year. And so we're looking at always increasing what we're ingesting, because if you remember Short Circuit, the movie from the 80s, yes. And you remember Johnny Five, the robot, what did he say to Jennifer, or was it Jessica, or whatever her name was, at the end of the night when he watched all that TV and read all those books, and he goes, more input, more data. For us, again, being sort of like a data analysis company, you know, with a network observability kind of like, you know, facade over the top, we want more information. We are not basing our tool or our platform on one type of telemetry. And so over time, Drew, yes, we'll be collecting more. We have a lot of stuff on the roadmap. But as of today, we're not looking at logs. That's another realm of parsing actual language and you know, event logs and things like that. Yeah. The cool thing is that we are actually moving very much in that direction with our own Kentik AI.
So if I think of what you talked about so far, so you're collecting data from various inputs, you know, either public, private, on-prem, off-prem,
that's right.
And you normalize them, you enrich the data, and you kind of load them into the database. So how do we extract insights from these data after they're sitting in your database?
Some of our customers, very few, will then take that and feed that into whatever tools they're using. And so there is that option as well. We're not averse to that. But most of our customers are logging into the Kentik portal and then developing their own custom dashboards to identify and look at and investigate what they're doing. One of the things that Avi Friedman, our co-founder and CEO, likes to say a lot is that Kentik is all about asking any question of your network. And what that means is, I mean, it's kind of metaphorical, right? What that means is that you can look into and dig deep into whatever direction you want to go from a very broad perspective and from a very granular perspective. So as an example, Eric, we have something called the Data Explorer. Now we also have the Metrics Explorer for Kentik NMS, where you can create any sort of simple or highly complex filter to investigate specifically and like down the rabbit hole, go as deep as you want to go, anything that you're looking into in your network that's occurring. And then you can stack in that filter data upon data upon data, meaning flow upon SNMP, upon streaming, upon routing tables. So you see it all in one place, in one visual representation, in one report. And that's how most of our customers are using us. They're going to log into Kentik, into the portal, look at the, whether it be Network Explorer or the Observation Deck, and they're going to have their dashlets and all that stuff that they have on their heads-up displays, right? You want to see what devices are up and down. You want to see what applications are consuming the most on your network, whatever is the use case for your organization and your role. But then I really feel like most of the network visibility and monitoring tools out there are like 80% that, right? 80% seeing the cool dashboards, and they're great at that. That's fine. And then maybe 10, 20% exploration. We're the inverse. Yes, of course, we provide the dashboards and the alerting. Those mechanisms are very important. We tie into whatever ticketing system and email system you want. But we're really all about then, I need to fix this problem in real time. I have the CIO like on my neck, breathing down hard, saying, fix this. I'm glad you're having fun troubleshooting it, Mr. Network Engineer, but you know, I need this thing fixed right now. So Data Explorer, Metrics Explorer, and now with Kentik AI, which is our natural language query engine, you can explore the data and create those filters as you want. They're kind of like SQL-like filters. But of course, with Kentik AI, you know, we abandoned that and it's just using natural language.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about that, because in previous lives, I remember I was putting together query languages like pages and pages. Of course, not overnight, but you start with something simple and you gradually just go overboard, really, in order to get that precise answer that I wanted. So can you tell us a little bit about this new Kentik AI or the Kentik NMS that you hope to, you know, or maybe you're already doing to replace the previous, you know, 5-page long query?
Sure. So I will say that Kentik NMS and Kentik AI, that we launched those at the same time. And so they're both related and like not related at the same time. In the sense that Kentik AI really applies to the entire platform, not just NMS. NMS, Network Monitoring System, Network Monitoring Service, whatever we call it.
System/service.
Yeah, right, right. It's a traditional network monitoring system. Our customers have been asking us for more than a few years, because we have a lot of customers that use us for flow, right? For application analytics and things like that, for BGP, a lot of service provider customers. And we have a lot of very, very large global scale, web scale enterprise customers that are like, man, I'd really like to get rid of my legacy NMS. You know, it doesn't support streaming, or it's slow to whatever reasons. And we're like, okay. So over the past couple of years, we developed Kentik NMS, which is part and parcel of the platform. You don't buy like all these different licenses. With Kentik, you just buy Kentik and it's all in there. There it is, whether you use one piece or you don't use it. And so Kentik NMS is part of our overall platform that will look at device metrics and will look at SNMP information, streaming telemetry. But because it's part of the same UDR, Eric, think about it. It's the same database. It's not multiple tools. We can track, we see a CPU utilization spike here and check it out at that exact, it's just an event timestamp. It's not that difficult, right? We see this change in your flow information. And lo and behold, we also see this change in, you know, these prefixes were pulled from the routing table or added to the routing table. And we can see all those things at the same time in the same database. And we can, you know, walk you through that as far as an engineer, which is why one of the things that we say is, what is the purpose of Kentik? Well, it's to augment you as an engineer. Used to be as a network engineer, but we're seeing more and more as a network engineer, cloud engineer. We have some SRE customers and folks like that as well.
I wanted to ask about the, you mentioned query language, and then you've moved to natural language processing. Talking to other companies, I'm learning that when they said they had natural language processing, what they had was sort of a chat window in front of essentially their query system and you wrote in your natural language question and they tried to sort of mash it into their existing query language that they didn't want to make you learn to see if they could get some kind of output that sort of matched the intent of your question. Now LLMs have come along, which are much more facile with human language. So are you talking about just sort of a nice little front end on your query language, or are you using an LLM in your NLP?
Kentik is not out there going around saying that we're AI ops company and, you know, we're all AI ad nauseum. We're not doing that on purpose because we're a network observability company. This is just another tool, Drew. Where we started was developing a model and training a model to do a thing, to answer questions about network data. And it was difficult with constrained resources to get the accuracy that we wanted.
Yeah.
And what we found over time with training the model, and things got better, but you need to have very high accuracy in a limited context window for natural language processing and the way that large language models, the specific models, work. The transformers and the attention mechanisms that we use in those. The context window is all of language, because you're responding to somebody, in my case, speaking in English in a prompt, but also all of the context of documentation and the telemetry that we're looking at as well. There's a lot of stuff going on. What we've done over the past year and a half or so, we are utilizing GPT-4 Turbo, and that gives us the layer in between, you know, the human being and then the data. The data that we put under all of that is what really is important. So when I say natural language query engine, we are talking about using like a GPT-4 interface, so that way you can interact with the data. So you can do things like ask a question like, what are my highest utilization interfaces in my Chicago office? You could do some more advanced things like, you know, what are the 3 highest interfaces in North America and how have they changed over the past 3 weeks? You know, things like that. There is some advanced query ability. Now, when you ask a question like that, the cool part is that it builds the query in the if-then statement. It's not really if-then, but it builds it for you on the side menu. So if you could see my hand in the air along the side of your screen on the portal, it's building the filter for you. You can see it, you can look at it, you can tweak it, you can save it. So under the hood, it is very SQL looking, but it is using natural language in that sense, built again on GPT-4 Turbo specifically. Eric, as you mentioned, we have found that that is more accurate because you can fine tune your own prompt to get the answer that you want. And in a what we call a journey, you start off with your first question. The system remembers what you asked. And as you ask subsequent questions or give it subsequent instructions, it will build upon that rather than start over. And so over the course of that quote unquote journey, you can have a cohesive data exploration. And whether that's in simple interface metrics or flow data or whatever it happens to be, it really is for the whole system.
That's pretty amazing. So essentially, if I follow your thoughts correctly, it builds that query for you and you could save it at the end. Is that like a per session or is that per company? I mean, once you save it, obviously you could share with other people.
Yep, that's right. You can export it, you could save it, you could tweak the filters. You don't have to go through the entire process of asking the questions if you don't like, but that's exactly what it is. And you can export anything in the system. The whole idea is that we're trying to also democratize that telemetry and that information among teams, because we're finding that this idea of just being a strict network engineer doesn't really exist the way it used to. And so exporting information or being able to look at network information when you're not a network engineer, those things are important now. So we have folks logging into the Kentik portal that are not necessarily network experts. They're not CCIEs. They're maybe an SRE or a cloud engineer that started as a sysadmin and then got into cloud networking. And they're, you know, they don't know necessarily what a BGP community is. So using natural language facilitates that, democratizes information. And of course, it just makes the mean time to resolution much faster. You get to your answer much faster. I did a demo recently for some folks using Kentik AI, we call it journeys, but using that to investigate an SD-WAN problem and why an application was, you know, performing lousy over a particular SD-WAN. And, you know, you ask it some questions and you find the root cause. And that was pretty neat. It was pretty quick. You didn't need to know the syntax of a Cisco box or a Juniper box or anything like that. It was just interacting with the data as you normally would, which is why on a broader scale, Eric and Drew, though Kentik is developing in this area, it is interesting to me to see how this technology is being applied to IT operations as a whole, network or otherwise, to facilitate like an assistant sort of role. Now, where that goes, I don't know. I know that there are struggles with things like hallucinations and marketecture and vaporware as well. Those are all things that are real that we have to struggle with. I know where Kentik is going, and where we're going with it is it's just another aspect of the platform where you can just interact with the data in order to make sure your application doesn't stink in that particular office.
Yeah, I mean, I think that natural language processing for exploration is really key. I remember in past lives, the network engineers are responsible for ingesting network information, system engineer ingesting system information, but it takes another discipline like the tools team or whatever tools that you're using just to be an expert at exploring those together. And then you have to transfer those knowledge over to the other teams for the expert domains. But if everybody could normalize that, you know, natural language processing, then that's really a game changer in my mind. And, you know, I'm very impressed that that's moving toward that direction.
And the entire industry is moving in that direction very, very quickly. So, you know, I'm seeing a lot of companies that are out there saying they're AI companies, but really what they are is they're just, you know, they're utilizing the API, the open API into GPT or whatever they're using. I'm remiss to say that, you know, I don't think that those are necessarily AI companies. You know, for us, it's just another tool as part of our overall tool belt of what we're doing to augment an engineer. Traditionally a network engineer, but again, today, you know, we're broadening into other types of engineers. But natural language processing and specifically large language models are moving in a direction where I think what we're going to see, Eric, is more than just this easy interaction with data. I think that's the primary thing that we're going to see over 2024 is this evolving and changing way that a human being interacts with data, not just computers. I keep saying data on purpose because that's ultimately what we care about. But once we start to see the plugins under the hood of actual general AI, not generative AI, and how we can then use natural language to also push configuration and make changes. And do you remember years ago when we talked about like SDN and intent-based networking? And we were all like, everything's going to heal itself and run autonomously. It's going to be amazing. And we're all going to be just sitting like drinking, you know, margaritas and the network will run itself. And then none of that ever happened. And not only did it not happen, everybody stopped talking about SDN. I don't remember the last time I read a blog post where those letters, those initial, that acronym was used. Sometimes I feel like that's where we're headed with this, that we are able to now head in that direction. We're going to make a meaningful step forward in that direction. Kentik specifically, our leadership is very practical in making very real steps forward in helping network engineers and not promising the world. And so where we're heading is not necessarily like auto remediation next quarter. We're focusing on how do we ingest more information and more types of data. Drew, you mentioned logs. I mentioned wireless. How do we ingest more so we can help an enterprise engineer, a service provider engineer really ensure performance and reliable application delivery. But I do see in the long term things like integrating with general AI to do some sort of automated remediation at a true grand scale, not just, you know, piecing together some Python scripts in an Ansible playbook. I say just, I take that back. That's still pretty awesome, by the way. I don't want to say just and like downplay it, but I think you know what I mean, right?
And I hope you haven't jinxed it by summoning the ghost of SDN.
Yeah, forgive me. Forgive me, ghost.
Yeah, you know, for me, I've seen that those acronyms, but people start having twists on them, software-driven networking, software-defined networking, and I think whatever twist that they need to fit their needs. So is it, as a geek, from one geek to another, you mentioned GPT-4 model.
Yeah.
Are you seeing the chaining of different models, or are you, what's the next stage from just, you know, kind of fine tuning with additional data and then normalize it down to a GPT model? Do you see a chaining of models? Do you see just a bigger model, different ones, a network specific model? Or, you know, I'm wondering because now you're seeing models that are specific for coding, specific for audio transcription, and so on. So like, where do you see the next step is for this direction?
Well, if you think about how a lot of the industry is dealing with hallucinations today using things like RAG, right? Where you're basically layering a bespoke data set on top of your already trained model. You know what, Eric, let's go back a step and talk about how this works for the audience's sake, right?
Sure.
What happens is you have this gigantic billion-dollar data center and you train it on an enormous amount of data. If it's an LLM, you're training it on, like, you know, the internet, right? And all the data that exists in text form. And that can take months and months. And you do that, and there's a process of like tokenization and embeddings and representing all that information in math so you can figure out probabilistic outcomes of like, if somebody says this sentence, then this is probably going to be the next word. Right? Things like that. Okay, great. But that's language. What we're doing now is we're seeing these data sets being layered on top to correct for hallucinations because the language doesn't know what a stinking like data center like or whether like a BGP, you know, community is. If I change this IP address, it doesn't know that stuff. It knows language. And so when you add that industry specific data on top of that, it corrects for those issues. And we're seeing a much higher accuracy rate for the results produced by things like GPT. We say GPT. GPT is the model. ChatGPT is that front-end interface that a lot of people are familiar with. But GPT behind the scenes is the actual large language model. That model, once it's trained, is trained. And you're just going to update it with new information. And right. So you have things like OWL. Have you heard of OWL? O-W-L? That is an IT-specific model that we're going to layer on top that will allow us to now use language in the context of our industry, right? And you can apply that to other industries like the medical industry or the aeronautics industry, right? Or aerospace, whatever, you know, airplanes. And so all of that terminology, all of that information now can be applied and understood when you ask it a question. And that's really difficult because there's nuance, there's contradiction. There's pretext within human language. But the reason we've come thus far, like in recent days or recent years, I should say, is because of things like the attention mechanism, because of transformers, because of the way that large language models are built today, not necessarily on older models like engrams and things like that. So it's less probabilistic and more contextual. And so I think that's what we're going to see over the next year, 2 years. We're going to see this layering of specific data sets on top of our already trained models, where people are going to say, I got this data set, and now I'm going to just leverage the API to tap into GPT, to tap into Llama, to tap into whatever, to Palm, so I can get some kind of good results.
So you mentioned RAG, which I think stands for Retrieval Augmented Generation. Is mm-hmm. that what you're talking about, having a specific set of data that you augment your trained model with? Is that the idea?
That's exactly right. And that really good way, also a lot of how the industry is doing that right now in limiting the context window, but at the same time, still having that very broad context window of language itself.
So I've got the underlying GPT essentially that's trained on the vagaries of human language. And then I augment that with a data set that's dedicated to my specific industry. So in this case, SNMP, NetFlow, et cetera.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And therein lies the reduction of hallucinations and errors and things like that. Whereas before, it was a struggle. The answer to that struggle was retraining the model, data cleaning. If you're familiar with data science, data cleaning, you know, and things like that, expensive. And when I say expensive, I mean computationally expensive, cost expensive, because retraining a model requires money and time intensive.
So this RAG, does that mean what it's drawing from is the data lake that Kentik is building, or are you looking at other data sets as well that are, you know, outside of what Kentik customers are giving you?
I can't get too deep into what we're doing as far as how we're solving for hallucinations using RAG at Kentik necessarily. I'm kind of speaking outside of the realm of Kentik now and getting into what LLMs do. But I can say that what we're doing is we are using that GPT-4 Turbo backend and then augmenting it with specific network data per customer, like you said, Drew. So yes. So in essence, we are doing that same thing, though not necessarily using RAG.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
That's why when you get a response, it is accurate. We were not publishing, maybe not a year, whatever. It was a long time where we were not launching the product because we were not satisfied with the accuracy of the results. And so we launched only when that accuracy reached a certain level.
That makes sense. I mean, I'm starting to play around with different models, and there's, you know, in case people are not familiar with the Llama 2 versus the Llama 2 Uncensored. So I imagine this is another layer of protection or accuracy enhancement that you're putting on top of the GPT-4 model or LLM to enhance that answer and cut down on the unnecessary, you know, hallucination or inaccuracies.
I want to know what Eric is asking Llama 2 Uncensored. That's a different podcast.
It's a hard sell. It's difficult to do, actually, because we don't necessarily have access to that larger model that's running, like GPT-4, for example, or Llama 2, whatever it happens to be. And so, we want to adjust some things in our back propagation, in the how we adjust the hyperparameters in the model itself when we do some fine tuning and the retrain. Well, we don't do any of that stuff. So we are limited in what we could do as far as after the model has been trained, it's fit for service, and then they, you know, whatever company offers it up in an open API for us to consume. We do what we can, and it is in the context of making sure that the data that then we add to that is accurate, that is up to date, and that's really all that we can do.
Yeah, that's all very interesting. So how can people get started with Kentik, with telemetry, network observability? What are the first steps that people could take?
I'll start broad and say that network observability is about gathering as much as you can in any form that you can, data, telemetry. And so if you're going down this road of going beyond just collecting SNMP into your tool, you're going to be hard pressed to find a tool that does all of it, right? And so you're going to start collecting SNMP and streaming and flow, and you're going to start looking at routing tables and screen scraping, and you want to dump it all into one tool. So I do start by encouraging you to get familiar with all these other technologies, understand a little about GNMI and gRPC, to learn a little bit about what eBPF is all about, learn what these tools, mechanisms, protocols are all about. And then you want to find a tool that incorporates it into one platform. Otherwise, you're going to be, you know, running 17 different tools on 17 different screens. You can do that if you want. That's fine. Maybe your team has to do that. But I encourage you to start looking into those specific things, because that's where we're going. I don't believe that SNMP is dead, in spite of what some bloggers and podcasters say. Drew, you may have said that. I don't know.
I've never said it was dead, because every vendor we talk to is still leveraging SNMP. So that's pretty good for a dead protocol.
Yeah, no, 90% of the organizations out there, everybody's running SNMP on some box somewhere. So you can't just not support it. And that's one of the advantages of Kentik, is that we support whatever. We just care about the data. So yes, we ingest SNMP, of course. And we also ingest streaming telemetry. So get familiar with streaming, start experimenting with it. I also encourage you to go to kentik.com and start a free trial. It is actually a free trial. We're not going to hound you with emails and sales calls. And you can send information from your own network or from your lab network or whatever you happen to have, or from your home network even. I do that myself, into the Kentik portal and start messing around with that. Now, I know some things are a little bit more difficult than others. Maybe you don't have load balancers and firewalls to send information from, but you could get started that way.
Is the free trial full feature Kentik, or what's the free trial lasted of? Is it just time bound or is it feature bound?
100% open for you, but it is 30 days.
Okay.
But listen, you know how it is. If it's something that you're interested in and you're exploring, you reach out and we work with you to help you figure out what are you trying to do with this, and we'll work with you. But yeah, you know, you can experiment with streaming telemetry, but it's something that you've not done before. That's something that we're very proud of, that we make it very, very easy for you to migrate from SNMP to streaming. We make it very easy for you if you're in a hybrid environment, which most people are, right? If you're migrating, you can't migrate in one night necessarily. So we accommodate both in one interface. It doesn't matter to us. It's just data. And also your flow information and your routing tables, all that stuff as well. You could start off that way, and then we'll walk you through the process.
That's great. I'm looking forward to it, to trying out myself and to try out the natural language processing and building that query via natural language, because I think that's really a game changer. Is there anything else that we're missing here, Phil, that you want to go into more or cover?
You know, I would say that this whole idea of natural language query, we don't know where that's going yet. And we don't know where necessarily it's going at Kentik. We have a roadmap, I will say that. So I know in vague terms where we're going in that sense. But, you know, like just as an example, just the other day, we started saying, hey, why don't we apply that same engine to like all our documentation? Mm-hmm. Like, how do I configure Kentik to do this? Now you can do that. So it's not just interrogating data, which is awesome unto itself, but you can start interrogating like our, you know, wiki and our documentation guides. We just see the opportunity growing and making it easier for engineers. That's something that I'll add, is that we don't know where the future is going to lead us in this, but I think it's really neat. And I had a difficult time with some of those marketing terms over the years, especially when I was a field engineer, right?
When you were network Phil and supposed to Phil from Kentik.
Yeah, right. But I have to say that today, looking at some of the things that we can achieve using generative AI in particular, but what's also happening with general AI, which you don't really see or hear talked much about lately, I'm really excited about that. So I'm interested to see what 2024 and beyond has for that.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for being honest about, it's very hard to create your model, to train your own model, because, you know, we tried it before and we know it's very hard. But, you know, nowadays, you sometimes you hear people start with that, and it almost makes people think that's where you should start. But, you know, where you should start is to find out the applications, to overlay your own data set on top of it. And I really enjoy that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's the alternative? Spend hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars? Like literally, that's not even a out of the blue number out of left field. That's an accurate number. Hundreds of millions or literally billions of dollars. And then a year or two training the model and figuring out how it works when it's already done. And so, yes, we can layer domain specific knowledge on top and then reap the rewards.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for being here, Phil. I really enjoy our conversation. And thank you, Drew, for co-hosting with me.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Network Automation Nerds Podcast. Do you have any feedback for Network Automation, our guest Phil, or this episode? Send me some follow-ups at packetpushers.net/FU. I want to hear from you. Check out our website at packetpushers.net to find other network engineering focused podcasts, blogs, YouTube videos, and join our Slack channels. Last but not least, remember that too much network automation will never be enough.